Now, I'm sure that everybody remembers the series we were doing on David in the evening service. And when the new pastor came, we left David in something of a problem. It was kind of like the old Saturday morning serials where someone was left hanging off a cliff. So just in case you might not recollect it entirely, I'm going to review for you briefly. So David had abused his power and privilege in his position as a king by taking the wife of another man, Bathsheba, the wife of Uriah the Hittite. And God had spoken to him and said, "Listen, if everything I gave you wasn't enough, I would have given you more similar things. You could have had more similar things had you asked, but you went and took something that wasn't yours, and you used my gifts that I gave you to do it. Therefore, you're going to be severely punished. And a lot of wrong things are going to come up right in your own household." And so there's a list of things that happened. One of his sons had a half-sister that he forced into a bad relationship. And David knew about it, and he was angry, but he didn't punish the man, okay, which was wrong number one. Well, this girl who had been abused had a brother who was not happy. And so he conspired to kill the fellow that did the deed. And he did. That was wrong number two. And so he ran off to his maternal grandparents' house, and he hid out there for quite a period of time away from the wrath of the king. But eventually, David was talked into bringing him back, and he was reinstated with no punishment of any kind. David had a real issue dealing with his children, and didn't seem to be able to punish them when they needed it. Well, now this son, who is named Absalom, comes back, and he's a tall and extremely handsome man. Everything that I am not, this fellow was. And so, had he bided his time, being the eldest surviving son, he probably would have walked right into the kingdom. But he couldn't wait. So he gets 50 men to run in front of him. He dresses up real nice. He tells everyone, "Oh, you have such a good case. If only I was the judge, I would help you. But my dad, he can't be bothered with you." And so there comes a conspiracy to take the throne away, power challenging. Power challenging has existed in the Middle East from time immemorial, okay, and it's still there. Everybody's trying to carve out a piece for themselves, take it away from somebody else, and take and make a pitch to their tribe, their group, their particular brand of religion, and stake out a territory which they then will be the absolute ruler of. There's no democratic tradition there. Something that our political leaders don't seem to have the gray matter to grasp. So it's happening. It's still happening. Same way. Power challenging. Get a following, okay? Get a hold of either some military or religious power, or ideally a combination of the two, and reach out and grab whatever you can get. That's what Absalom did. And so this rebellion of Absalom was then the sixth wrong, starting with the relationship with Bathsheba. And of course, David had been told that he would be punished. So if we go to the book of 2 Samuel, chapter 15, we can begin to see this. In the first part of the chapter, it speaks to Absalom and what he was doing, you know, as far as power challenging. He's building a base here. Okay? That's a traditional way. Build a base, look for sponsors, whisper in ears, get people on board. When the time is ripe, then you strike. So, David had been told he would be punished, and we can see here essentially the fruit of sin. The tree of sin grew up, and it bore very bitter fruit for David. And so he is out of the secure palace, and we're going to start in verse 13. A messenger came to David saying, "The hearts of all the men of Israel are with Absalom." And David said to his servants who are with him in Jerusalem, "Arise and let us flee, for otherwise none of us will escape from Absalom. Go in haste, or he will overtake us quickly and bring down calamity on us and strike the city with the edge of the sword." David doesn't want that for Jerusalem, his capital. And he has in mind he's going to go out to some of the strongholds. He spent years fleeing from Saul. There was no cave, there was no woods, there was no wilderness spot that David didn't know by heart. But once again, David's in danger of his life and he has to live by faith. And you learn to live by faith when all else fails. You know, if the money can't buy it and your experience doesn't understand it, though we don't generally flee from adversaries with the edge of the sword anymore, many times in family issues or domestic problems, we learn that things are beyond our control and beyond our power to fix or control. And we have to learn to live by faith because it's not in our hands. We can pray. We can do the best we can, but some things are quite simply not in our hands. We can't control it. So God sends friends and advisors to help him. So in verse 15 it said, "The king's servants said, 'Behold, your servants are ready to do whatever my lord the king chooses.' And so the king went out with all his household, but the king left 10 concubines to keep the house. And the king went out and all the people with him, and they stopped at the last house. Now all his servants passed on beside him, all the Cherethites, the Pelethites, the Gittites, 600 men who had come with him from Gath passed on before the king." These are new arrivals now. "And the king said to Ittai the Gittite, 'Why would you also go with us? Return and remain with the king, for you are a foreigner and an exile. Return to your own place. You came only yesterday, and shall I today make you wander with us while I go where I will? Return and take back your brothers. Mercy and truth be with you.'" Now Ittai had only just arrived, but he stayed with David. "Ittai answered the king and said, 'As the Lord lives, and as my lord the king lives, surely wherever my lord the king may go, whether for death or for life, there also your servant will be.' And David said, 'Ittai, go and pass over.' So Ittai the Gittite passed over with his men and all the little ones who were with him." I tell you truly, old friends are wonderful, but never hesitate to make new friends. They can be very loyal and good friends. And the person who closes off his circle of friends is a foolish person. There's always someone new out there, and invest in people. Cast your bread upon the waters. It'll come back after many days. Joab, the general, was with David to help him. Hushai stayed in the palace under the pretense of serving Absalom. He really stayed loyal to David. So there's two elements that I want to talk about in this account, which are extremely important. And they come about in much that we do. One of them is advice, and the second one is time. Good advice can be more important than all the follow-up work in the world. You know, and God bless some of the people that have said to me, "Ward, don't do it that way. Because if you do it that way, this or that problem is sure to arise." Good advice helps us get it right the first time. In this case, good advice in our story, in our account, was thwarted by David's friend. And so this was a big help to David. And we're going to go on a little bit. All the country was weeping with a loud voice. All the people passed over, and the king passed over the brook Kidron, and all the people passed over toward the wilderness. Zadok come, and all the Levites with him, carrying the Ark of the Covenant of God. They set down the Ark of God, and Abiathar came up until all the people had finished passing. And the king said to Zadok, "Return the Ark of God to the city. Send it back. If I find favor in the sight of God, then he will bring me back again and show me both it and his habitation. But if he should say thus, 'I have no delight in you,' behold, here I am. Let him do to me as seems good to him." David knew he was being punished, and he knew he deserved it. The king also said to Zadok the priest, "Are you not a seer? Return to the city in peace, and your two sons with you, your son Ahimaaz and Jonathan, the son of Abiathar. I am going to wait at the fords of the wilderness till word comes from you to inform me." And therefore Zadok and Abiathar returned the Ark of God to Jerusalem and remained there. And David went up the ascent of the Mount of Olives and wept as he went. His head was covered. He walked barefoot. All the people who were with him each covered his head and went up weeping as they went. Just an interesting note here. We think of this man, who was a man after God's own heart, being rejected by his people from being king and leaving Jerusalem and going outside the city walls. Can we think of another example of someone who was rightful king, was rejected by his people, and went out of Jerusalem outside the city walls? I think we can. Someone told David, saying, "Ahithophel is among the conspirators with Absalom." And David said, "Oh Lord, I pray, make the counsel of Ahithophel foolishness." Because this man was so smart that his advice was very highly regarded. And it happened as David was coming to the summit where God was worshipped that Hushai the Archite met him with his coat torn, dust on his head. He'd been mourning. David said, "If you pass over with me, you will be a burden to me. But if you return to the city and say to Absalom, 'I will be your servant as I have been your father's servant, so now I will be yours,' you can thwart the good counsel of Ahithophel for me. Are not Zadok and Abiathar the priest with you? So it shall be, whatever you hear from the king's house, you shall report to Zadok and Abiathar the priest. And behold, their two sons are with them there." So Hushai, David's friend, came to the city. And Absalom came into Jerusalem. So, we're going to see that good advice was indeed thwarted by David's friend Hushai. He played on common fears and cautious conservative thought to advance a plan that looked good. And you have to understand that many a battle has been lost through cautious or conservative tactics when bold action is called for to win the day. And so by his tactics, Hushai gained David time. Most any plan or idea is dependent upon time, and it can be delayed, it can be defeated. And delay gives time to marshal opposition. Delay gives time to make a counterplan. Delay means the element of surprise is lost. So next time you have a plan, someone wants to delay it, check carefully to make sure they're not trying to defeat it. At the Battle of Gettysburg, there was a Confederate cavalry troop that was coming around and back of the Union forces, Jeb Stuart, a man that was virtually never turned back. And a young, impetuous Union cavalry officer, even though outnumbered, charged headlong into Jeb's cavalry and turned them back, and was a very important part of that particular battle. Now, if you want to know the rest of the story, the name of that young and impetuous officer was George Armstrong Custer. He was also impetuous at a later date, but we can't talk about that now. So, as David is leaving the city, there's six points I want to talk about. We'll see if we can get them all done, because there were demands on my time in this service today. There were 600 men that joined David, this is number one, under the command of Ittai. And this was recent. David told him, you just came yesterday. But he said, mercy and truth be with you. There was no hard feelings. He says, go ahead and go back. I understand. But the new friend shows what? He's a new friend, but he's a true friend. Because he said, no, I'll stay with you, whether to life or death. And so God is showing support for David in time of trouble. Rather than demanding, you've got to come with me, or pleading, David says, do as you wish. And David knows better than anyone what it is to flee and go wherever you can. He says, why would you go with me and go wherever you can? It's tough out there. You better go back. Then take your chances. But the man stays, and what does David receive? A general that's going to command a third of his forces in the upcoming battle. Number two, David leaves 10 concubines to keep the house. I do not have time to speak of the value of this decision, and I don't have time to justify the practice of multiple wives and concubines. It's a reflection of the values of the time. And a new pretender to the throne might kill the wives of the former king. Some of these wives were from neighboring kingdoms, and they cemented various alliances. A new pretender to the throne might want to abolish them or might want to get them for themselves. So these women had a fair amount of value for David. But to the degree the 10 concubines that he left behind are seen as expendable. But they become of value to Absalom with the advice of Ahithophel. So if we go to Samuel 16:21, okay, in verse 20, Absalom asked Ahithophel, give your advice, what do we do? He said, go into your father's concubines who he has left to keep the house. All Israel will hear that you have made yourself odious to your father, and the hands of all who are with you shall be strengthened. And they pitched a tent for Absalom on the roof, and Absalom went into his father's concubines in the sight of all Israel. And the advice of Ahithophel, which he gave in those days, was as if one inquired of the Lord. So was all the advice of Ahithophel regarded by both David and Absalom. And furthermore, if Ahithophel said to Absalom, please let me choose 12,000 men that I may arise and pursue David tonight. I will come upon him while he is weary and exhausted. I'll terrify him so all the people who are with him will flee, and I will strike down the king alone. And I will bring back all the people to you. The return of everyone depends on the man you seek. Then all the people will be at peace. Now the plan pleased Absalom and all the elders, and Absalom said, call Hushai the Archite and let us hear what he has to say. And Hushai came in, and they said, shall we carry out his plan? And he says, this time the advice that Ahithophel has given is not good. You know your father and his men, that they are mighty men and are fierce, like a bear robbed of her cubs in the field, and your father is an expert in warfare and will not spend the night with the people. Behold, he has hidden himself in one of the caves or in another place, and it will be when he falls on them at the first attack, whoever hears it will say, there has been a slaughter among the people who follow Absalom. And even the one who is valiant, whose heart is like the heart of a lion, will completely lose heart. For all Israel knows your father is a mighty man, and those who are with him are valiant men. But I counsel all Israel be gathered from Dan to Beersheba as a sand by the sea, and you personally go into battle. So we shall come to him as one of the places where he can be found and fall on him as the dew falls on the ground. And of him and the men who are with him, not even one will be left. So that advice was listened to. It appealed to conservative thought. It appealed to common fears. It appealed to the king's, new king's, vanity that he would go into battle himself, a man who had zero military experience. Well, so this brought about the concubines, one of the punishments that God pronounced upon David due to his sin with Bathsheba. The tent was pitched. This was a signal the rebellion could not go back because of this deed. This was a deed from which there was no return. Absalom claimed the throne. He claimed whatever belonged to the former king was now his. He made himself odious. They had to finish what they started. Many times the zeal of the followers are a reflection of the zeal of the leader, and this is pretty zealous. So the more the leaders totally sold out to the cause, the more the followers will follow. In that day and culture, part of the authority and power of the king was bound up in the wives. Okay? Remember, David wouldn't even make peace with Israel until they sent back his wife, the daughter of Saul. So a rich and powerful person could have multiple wives, very beautiful wives, wives related to kings or nobles, other countries, women for prominent families. He could have concubines, which were women with which he consorted, were not highly enough regarded to marry. So the value of a wife was not restricted to ancient Israel. Okay? Centuries later in England, a wife who was unfaithful was considered to have committed treason, which was an act punishable by death. Remember the six wives of King Henry VIII. So, and as a matter of fact, the partner who was unfaithful with the wife of the king was also considered to have committed treason against the crown. So, it would have been common for a king in those days then to have such women put to death, even though they had no choice in the matter. David did not do that when he returned. But we do see the effects of David's fondness for women as a thread running through the whole affair. The original sin came from what? Sending for Bathsheba. Without multiple wives and multiple children, there wouldn't have been the infighting and the jockeying for position. Oh, my son's going to be king. No, my son's going to be king. Oh, my son's going to be king. And then I'll be the queen mother, you know. So it would have. It's much less likely, had that not been true, that the sinful affair with Amnon and Tamar would have ever happened. And, of course, if there hadn't been 10 concubines to leave behind, that incident there would never have happened either. So as David left the city, as we said before, Zadok and the Levites came and brought the Ark of the Covenant along. David didn't take the Ark with him. He instructed Zadok, take it back in the city. Some of these things, as he leaves, we see the heart of David. He understood many things about worship. The Ark was not a lucky charm. It was not an idol. God was not contained in the ark, and he could not be compelled to go with the ark wherever it went. David understood that worship of God is independent of any one person. So even if God permitted David to die, and he said this, the ark, the priesthood, the Levites, the worship would continue. And David said if he finds favor in the sight of the Lord, that he would return to Jerusalem. He would see the ark, and he would see the habitation again. The ark belonged in Jerusalem to show the sovereignty of God over the nation. And like David, we have hope when we have hope in Christ. Worship continues. Pastors and members may come and may go, but the worship stays. We don't need any particular person or persons to worship here. But we need sound doctrine. We need good teaching. So there's many examples of this in the Old Testament. Even if the nation departed, God yearned after them and sent prophets and so forth. And We want to stay in sound doctrine. We don't want to follow the example of some who have turned away. So the foundation in the modern church is Christ. The head of the church is Christ. These are the things we need to remember as we teach the next generation. So David learns, number four, as he's leaving the city, that Ahithophel had joined the conspiracy, and he'd considered him a good friend. Okay? So he prayed that his counsel would be thwarted. As he walked along, his prayer was answered in the person of Hushai the Archite. And he was ready to go with David, but David sent him back. Sent him back. Next, we see Ziba come. Okay? 16:1, Ziba, the servant of Mephibosheth, met him with donkeys, 200 loaves of bread, 100 clusters of raisins, 100 summer fruits, and a jug of wine. And he says, "Why do you have these? The donkeys are for the king's household, bread and summer fruit for the young men, and the wine for whoever is faint in the wilderness." Okay? He asks about Mephibosheth, and Ziba said, "Oh, he's staying in Jerusalem because he's saying today the house of Israel will restore the kingdom of my father to me." Now, is Ziba telling the truth? I've studied the account quite carefully. I can't make up my mind whether he's telling the truth or whether he's making up a story to make his boss look bad. The last issue is an unpleasant one. David is mourning. And as he comes along, there was a fellow of the name of Shimei, the son of Gera. He was from the house of Saul. Okay. And he threw stones at David and the servants, and he was cursing at him. He said, get out, you man of bloodshed, you worthless fellow. The Lord has returned upon you the bloodshed of the house of Saul, in whose place you reign. And the Lord has given the kingdom into the hand of your son Absalom. You are taken in your own evil, for you're a man of bloodshed. Now, we remember Abishai, the man who was willing to go down into Saul's camp with David. When David asked, "Who's going to go with me?" He said, "I'll go." And he said, "Saul is sleeping." Remember what he said? He said, "Let me strike him to the ground just once, and I won't strike again." But David said, no, he was willing to take that on himself. He was a tough man and a bold man. And he said, "Why should this dead dog curse my lord the king? Let me go over now and cut off his head." But the king said, "What I have to do with you, O sons of Zariah? If he curses, and if the Lord has told him, curse David, then who shall say, why have you done this?" So he said to all his servants, "My son who came out of me seeks my life. How much more this Benjamite? Let him alone and let him curse. Perhaps for the Lord has told him. Perhaps the Lord will look on my affliction and turn good to me instead of cursing this day." And so they went along on the way, and Shimei went along on the hillside parallel with them, and as he went, he cursed and threw stones and threw dust at him. So, just think about it now. When we endure hard times, it can make us angry. It can make us ugly. It can make us hard to live with. We can be hard to get along with. We can lash out. So here we get another glimpse at the heart of David. Abishai is ready to take care of this fellow for David, but David said no. He's aware the Lord is punishing him. This was predicted by the prophet, okay, and he's willing to turn the other cheek. Turning the other cheek is something that is much easier in theory than in practice. I say this from experience. He doesn't want the man harmed, even though it's well within his power to harm him. And he says, perhaps the Lord will turn good to him rather than evil. So the behavior of Shimei and Ahithophel is a reminder we are only men. We look on the exterior. We can't look on the heart. Shimei has apparently hated David for some time, but didn't have a suitable opportunity to let that out. Ahithophel seemed willing enough to support Absalom, None of this came out until the conspiracy got strong and events precipitated it. Let me tell you something. When people get upset, when people get angry, when there's an angry outburst, a lot of times the truth comes out. I've seen it many times. Before they know it, the truth tumbles out of their mouth that they've kept hidden behind a false face for a long time. And so when people are upset and they're ranting along, I tend to kind of let them rant along and I listen. It's very interesting to me to know what's in their heart, really. So David waits at the ford of Jordan now like he waited in the field for Jonathan to tell him what Saul was going to do. He can't take much action. He's got to depend on his friends. So he had a high regard for the advice of Ahithophel. And Ahithophel was the one that had advised Absalom, use the concubines to show that you're the new guy and that you're going to take everything. And he wants to take bold action and advises Absalom to strike early. He wants to pursue David immediately before the shock of fleeing Jerusalem wears off. And he assumes that David and the ones with him will be tired, they'll be discouraged. And the bold stroke is twofold. Number one, they strike. Number two, they grant amnesty. That's what he's saying when he's saying the return of the whole is dependent on the one man. The army will drive off David's supporters and kill David. After this is done, the rest of the people are to be brought back. No mention of any slaughter of David's supporters, which would cause lasting blood feuds and bitterness. His comment is, like the return of the whole is the man you seek. So if David is killed and his supporters are brought back, then there'll be peace. Once the king is dead, there's really nothing left to fight about. The power, the authority, the blessing that was all bound up in David is gone forever. They'll bring him back and bury him in the tombs of the king. But no wholesale vengeance will be sought against the supporters of David. Okay? That way, people don't have to fear retribution. Bring the whole group back, and if there's some individuals, a few with bitterness or anger, there's plenty of time to deal with them later when things have settled down. But the mass of people would be brought back, okay? Well, the same house and the same line would be ruling. And since David cannot be brought back to life, very few would wish to continue to fight. We can see that that is excellent advice that he was given. But fortunately for David, he didn't take the advice. And in the next installment of David, we're going to find out what happened. There was a very pitched battle. And as a result of the battle, of course, everybody knows that David did indeed go home and died in his own bed. But it's interesting to see how the fruits of the tree of sin brought David bitterness and made him flee in front of enemies, even though he was a man getting up in years at that time. So we'll have our closing hymn now, if I can prevail upon Terry to come back.